Going to read to us this morning. As you know, we're looking at the fruit of the Spirit, which is in Galatians, but we're going to read from Matthew chapter 14, very famous verses. Jesus walking on the water. It is up on the screen, but if you want to follow it in a Bible, please feel free to do that as well. Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Thank God for his word. Have you ever had a meal where, when the last bit of food went in, you thought you were going to explode because you'd eaten so much? I'm getting a few nods with smiles on your faces. So some of you are thinking, that was a good meal. I've been there many a time, I'm afraid to say, where I just didn't feel like I could manage anything else. I was absolutely full. They used to say if you have a McDonald's that you always feel hungry after a McDonald's, don't they? I don't know if you ever heard that. But I was once taken to a McDonald's and I got no choice into what I ordered. I was with a family and they were quite a large family. I can't think of any other way to put it. They were quite a large family and they went, "We'll order for you, Mark." So I was like, right. And I came back and instead of just having like one burger meal, they'd bought me two meals for me and for them as well. And I was like, right, not wanting to be rude. And it was all large as well. They'd gone large on both of them. Anyway, I sort of forced it down. I mean, I loved it. It was great. And then they were like, right, dessert. So I thought, oh, goodness. So I looked on the menu as was then. I thought, what is the smallest thing? And I thought the little ice cream cone, because the cone's about that big, and I was thinking a little bit of ice cream, I probably manage. I'll just have the ice cream. Anyway, I come, brings it over, and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, the ice cream machine broke." And it was like this high of ice cream, just like, you know, like that. And they went, it just kept on going, and it wouldn't stop. So they just, I'm like, my plan didn't work. Anyway, I obviously forced it down. And I rolled home, basically. I was so full, and the phrase, you know, "you were hungry after McDonald's," didn't really work for me that way. I was not hungry. I was bursting. About an hour later, I was ready to eat again. And that's my trouble. I don't know if that's your trouble, but even when I'm really full, a point comes, usually not very long after I've eaten, where I think, yeah, I think I could probably manage something else now. Bag of crisps or something. So I was delighted this morning when Angie thought I'd lost some weight. I mean, that was great because, you know, not true, but really great. Why am I talking about being full? Well, faithfulness quite simply means full of faith. What it simply means. faithfulness is to be full of faith. And I want to be full of faith in that same way where we feel like we can't get any more food in us. I want to be full of faith all of the time, not thinking half an hour later, I'm full of faith this morning, but in half an hour, my faith level suddenly has dropped. And I hope that you want that as well. But can I be completely honest with you this morning? Can I? Because I'm a little bit nervous to say this, if I'm honest. I've found this sermon quite hard to write this week. And the reason I found it hard to write is because I do not always feel faithful. I'm not saying that I'm not always faithful. I don't always feel it. And I speak to you this morning, I guess, wondering, well, where am I on this faithfulness thing? How I need this particular segment of fruit to grow more deeply in me. There are moments when I'm very full of faith. You know, I could take on the whole world. And then there are some mornings, afternoons and evenings where I'm not. And that's the harsh reality. And I'm sorry if you want to get rid of me now as your minister, because I'm not full of faith all the time. But I just want to be honest with you. You see, to define faithfulness helps us because it begins to realise what it's about for us, obviously. And there's something of being steadfast. Consistency. It's a carefulness in keeping what God has entrusted with us. It's a conviction that the scriptures are entirely reflect reality. That biblical faithfulness requires a belief in what the Bible says about God, his existence and his words and his character that we uphold in everything that we are and everything that makes us us, that is what our centre is. Faithfulness is believing that God is who he says he is. And obviously, as we showed at the beginning, it means that we trust God and what he says in the Bible with everything. Even if our eyes are telling us something differently, even if the world is telling us something different, that actually we learn to trust the Bible. Trusting in him and his promises, no matter what the circumstances. That we would remain loyal to him. Literally, to the point of death. This is faithfulness. God, this is big, isn't it? This is why I don't wake up feeling faithfulness every morning. Because sometimes it feels too hard. But you see, it's not something we have to achieve. It's something that the Spirit can grow in us. Not only is it a fruit of the Spirit, it's also a gift. The gift of faith. I have a friend who, when he was at Bible college, a different Bible college to the one I was at, but at the end of their time there, their main tutor would sit down with them and basically talk about all their weaknesses before they left the college. It was a nice conversation, isn't it? So they sat down in front of my friend, and I could have pointed out loads of weaknesses to him, but he said his tutor sat down and he said, "The biggest weakness I see in you, Matt, is that you've never ever had a crisis of faith." I was thinking, I don't see that as a weakness. And do you know what? To this day, he left Bible college probably 30 years ago. And his life has not always been smooth. And he's still never had a crisis of faith. There's a gift of faith. And I want to show us some examples of faithfulness this morning. Because I hope, like me, you want to be full of faith daily. Do you have any heroes of the faith, as I would call them? People who you might know, Christians who you might know personally, or, you know, perhaps ones who have written books, or famous Christians going back in history who you might look at and say, do you know what, their life really inspires me. Sometimes it's good to have inspirational sort of Christian heroes like that. Not that we worship them, but that we look at their life and think, I wonder if some of that, because they're just normal humans like we are. One of mine was a guy called William Carey, who I'm sure some of you have heard of, a great Baptist missionary, a pioneer in kind of mission. But he said, expect great things and attempt great things. Expect great things from God and expect great things from God. Expect and attempt. I love it. And so as we begin to look now at some different characters in the Bible and some different scenarios, I think it gives us a little bit of an insight. It demonstrates to us a way in which this word faithfulness can become something that we really grasp. Joseph in the Old Testament. In Genesis 37, I'm sure you all know the story of Joseph and his technicolored dream coat. If you haven't read it in the Bible, you may have seen it at a theatre. We're told that he is given this dream that he would finally, that his family would actually bow down to him. That the sun and the moon and the 11 stars would bow down to him. And it was talking about his family and his brothers. However, quite a lot happens between that actually happening and when he's first given that dream. He's sold into slavery by his own brothers. He's thrown into prison. And yet, in his faithfulness, he knew that God would still work out his purposes in his life. See, this is faithfulness in action. Faithfulness isn't just when the good stuff is happening. Take Job. Not an easy book always to get our head round, and maybe something that we will look at some point. God allows Satan to hit Job where it's going to hurt him most. And so his wealth is taken away. His family are taken away, killed. His health is taken away. And we read all of this just in the first chapter of Job, that his life is suddenly gone from one thing to something completely different. And most of us, if that was me, if I'm honest, I would probably be thinking, well, God, what are you doing? Job says this, Job 1, 20 to 21, he says, at this Job got up, he tore his robe, he shaved his head, then he fell to the ground to worship. Well, there is the mourning there, isn't there? The tearing of the robe, the anger, the shaving the head. But then there's this worship. And he says, naked I came to my mother's womb, and naked I shall depart. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. You see, despite everything, Job remained faithful. And one of the things that I find encouraging about Job is that he was also very real with his emotions as well. It wasn't just a, oh well, I'm still going to worship God anyway. He was beset with doubts and questions, but he remained faithful. He felt sorry for himself, but he remained faithful. He was angry with God, but he did not lose his faith. He pleads for mercy and relief from what's happening, but he does not lose his faith. He cries out to God and often feels like God is not answering him, but he does not lose his faith. You see, in and through it all, Job remained faithful. He sort of held on to God despite it all. We come into the New Testament. Obviously, there's loads more examples in the Old Testament, but take us all day. We move into the New Testament, Paul and Silas in Acts 16. We read that they'd basically prayed for a girl, and because she, you know, was possessed. But because of that, it meant that she couldn't earn any money for her family, and they got angry. This one good act led to them being seized by an angry crowd. They were then stripped naked and beaten by the authorities. They were shackled and thrown into the innermost cell of the prison because they prayed for somebody. Maybe you and I in that circumstance might begin to be a bit like, really, God? Paul and Silas, despite this, remained faithful and steadfast. They prayed. They were singing praises to God whilst they were in their cell. This earthquake hits. They're suddenly free to leave. The shackles have been broken. The walls have come down. But they remained there and actually preached the gospel to the guard who was looking, who was meant to be making sure none of the prisoners escaped. Faithfulness in action, remaining loyal and dependent on God no matter what. There was this man who was mountain climbing, got into a bit of trouble, and basically got himself stuck. Remote mountain. Not knowing what to do, he shouts out, God, save me! Remarkably, he hears God respond. Let go of the mountain. Jump backwards, and I'll catch you. Man thinks about this for a moment and thinks, oh, maybe I'm hearing things. So he shouts out again, God, save me! Here's God say to him, let go of the mountain. Fling yourself backwards and I'll catch you. The man on the mountain thinks about this for a moment in this predicament. And he shouts, somebody else save me! It wasn't a true story, just in case you were wondering. See, we come to Peter, who we read about. There's so much in this account. I love this story. But do you notice just how faithful Peter is in this? He is so faithful to the voice of Jesus that he gets out of a boat. And the Bible tells us that he walks on water. He's so obedient, he gets out the flipping boat, people. And for this moment, he is walking on the water. He gets out the boat. Does this not blow you away? And then we know, don't we? We know this story well, I'm sure most of us. Obviously, Jesus says to him, come. Peter's one of those people who sometimes he doesn't engage his mouth before his brain. I think I'm a bit like that sometimes. He says, oh, Jesus, if it's you, tell me to come out to you. So Jesus just says, yeah, come on then. Let's have some fun here. And Peter probably at that moment was thinking, what have I said? But you see, he's faithful to Jesus. And he's looking at Jesus at this point. And so he gets out and he starts to walk. And it's only when suddenly you just wonder if a wave like splashes against his leg, which causes him to look down or something. Or he feels the wind blowing against him. And suddenly this wind and these waves cause us distraction and he loses his focus, doesn't he? He forgets why he got out the boat in the first place, just for a moment. and he begins to sink. The fear takes over him. The fearfulness gets him more than the faithfulness. And so often I think that happens to us, doesn't it? The fear grabs us more than the faith. And he begins to sink, and I love this. Immediately Jesus reaches out and grabs him, picks him up. And then we read these words which so often we interpret Jesus as being cross with Peter. Because we read these words where it says, "You of little faith." And sometimes when we read that, and I don't know how I read it when I read it, but sometimes we read it with this kind of annoyance in our voice that Jesus says to him, "Oh, you of little faith." And you know, the more I read it, I think, did Jesus speak like that to him? Did he? Is that our own intonation on it? Perhaps actually Jesus said, "You, Peter, of little faith. You did it, didn't you? You of little faith, you did it. You got out the boat and you started to walk on water. Then why did you doubt? At that point, why did you then begin to doubt?" And I see it more, you know, we can hear the same words, but they can be said in very different ways. And I don't think Jesus is cross with Peter. I think he's trying to encourage him and actually say, "You have little faith. Why did you doubt then? Because in your little faithness, you did something remarkably faithful. You got out the boat." You see, this is the kind of adventure that I think faithfulness brings us to. This adventure where we say, "Okay, God, I'm all in. I'm all in with this. Regardless of what happens, I'm going to be all in and see where this journey, my life, is taken because of my faithfulness in you." And I hope as a church that both individually and collectively we might say, "God, you know what? I'm all in for this. I'm all or nothing. I can't be anything else." Because once we throw everything in, our community are going to begin to stand up and take notice. Because we're not going to be like any other community. How am I doing for time? The clock's disappeared. I haven't got too long. It's enough of that, you. I won't play the video, thanks Anthony, I won't play it, but I don't know if you've ever heard of the Bali Nine. They were a group of nine men, I think mainly from Australia, who were charged with smuggling heroin out of Bali and a huge sort of drug ring. And the two main kind of ringleaders of this smuggling group, they were all caught and thrown into a Bali prison. Whilst they were in prison, these two ringleaders became Christians. And there was appeals for their release because the sentence they had been given was basically death. They were going to be shot facing the firing squad. And there was quite a lot of sort of appeals and things going on. For 10 years, they were in prison in Bali, and they'd become Christians, and there was appeals to say that, you know, they shouldn't be shot and all of this. But the Bali authorities upheld the decision. And the day came for them to face the firing squad. And you can read about this, but there's a video of their pastor talking, because she was invited to come and just be present at their execution. And we read, and the account that she and others give is that they refused to wear blindfolds. Before it happened, they were hugging each other and praying. And they sang that song that I badly started at the beginning. They sang 10,000 Reasons. And the Bali you know, the people there who were about to do it, they would have had no idea what they were singing. But they sang praises to God. And the line in the song that says, at that time when my, what's the exact words? It's something like, on that day when my time is done, they sang that line and then they were shot. You see, they weren't particularly nice people until they met Jesus. But even in the midst of that awful situation, as they were facing, literally looking death in the eye, they were able to sing praises to Jesus. They remained faithful, even in this awful situation. You see, the reality is that faithfulness is not really natural to us. When we're faced with trouble and disaster and persecution, our natural response is probably to be more defensive. But through the work of Christ and the Spirit in us, this faithfulness becomes supernatural. It can work in us and out of us and through us. And so I'll leave you with these last three things. I've gone on a bit. I've probably been a bit heavier than usual. But I really want us to grasp this. Faithfulness, number one, starts with being obedient to Jesus. Now, if you've got a rebellious spirit in you, the word obedience does not really ring very well. We don't like, really, I don't think human nature likes to be obedient. Baptists are not meant to be obedient, really. But we are meant to be obedient to Jesus, to follow him, whatever the circumstances, whatever the consequences, whatever he asks us to do. When he says to you, get out the boat, will you, with little faith, get out of the boat? There's times where if I was in the boat, I'd start the engine and I'd get to shore pretty quickly. It starts with obedience. Faith is believing in his promises, even when we think God's being silent to us. Whatever happens, believe it because God has promised it. There's a little saying, believe what you know, and know what you believe. And one of the things that we need to know that we believe is that God always wants the best, and he knows what is best. We like to think we know what is best. But I want to more follow a God who knows what is best. So it's obeying him, believing in his promises, and knowing that he knows best. In other words, trusting him completely, that whatever situation we're in, we would fall back in to the arms of the Father. May this fruit of faithfulness keep growing and growing and growing. And you know, this is why we have church, because I can't do this on my own. I can't grow like this on my own, and nor can you. We need each other. That's why God's given us church, because we need each other. We're not meant to walk this world on our own. We're not meant to walk the Christian life solo. The whole point is we have each other, so that when we're not feeling like this, others can lift us up and encourage us and help us and stir us up. And then when we're not like that, they can do the same to us. This is church, people. Let's be just still for a moment. We invite you, Spirit, to move among us. Increase our faithfulness, that we might be full of faith in everything. In everything, God. We invite you, Holy Spirit, to move among us now, to speak to us, to fill us afresh, to fall down on us. to change us. In Jesus' name.